The Dr. Bill Deagle Show is going to be postponed until next week. I apologize for any of you who were quite excited about that show. The doctor has informed me that something has come up. I know exactly what it is. He mentioned it on his show an hour ago, which I was a guest on. I was actually, if any of you happen to be listening, I was on his show, and the internet went out here in West Lafayette, Indiana, so I was cut off and could not finish on his show, unfortunately. But we will have Dr. Bill Deagle on next week. We're going to pre-record the show earlier in the day on Thursday because this show coincides with his, the doctor's show. So we'll record it Thursday morning next week, and then we'll be all set to go for a recorded show 1 week from today. You definitely don't want to miss that show. We're going to discuss swine flu, remedies for the swine flu, herbal antibiotics. And Doc has told me that he's going to reveal some information he's never revealed before on air next week. So you definitely want to not miss that show and tell anybody who may be interested to tune in. This is the Antimatter Radio Show. It's September 3, 2009. We're live today from West Lafayette, Indiana. Got an incredible show for you. First, I want to explain a couple things about this show and then give some hints on upcoming broadcasts of this show in the next couple weeks. The Antimatter Radio Show is devoted to archaeology, meditation, spirituality, attack against the New World Order, the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, and world religions. And also, can't forget, revisionist history. If those are the things that you're interested in, this show is definitely, as you can verify from previous broadcasts, the best show, I think, around for the mixture of all those topics. Antimatter means against physicalism and materialism. The world religions tell us that true spirituality is about contacting the light forces of the universe, of reality. Just like when Saul was on the road to Damascus, he collapsed down on the ground in a vision of the light of God. The Brahmanists in India, the mystic Hindus, often called the Upanishads, they also discussed ultimate reality, which they called Brahman, and they said it was like a light of an infinite sun. And those are some of the things I'm going to talk about today. So what we want to understand is that science has also discovered that these are what reality is ultimately composed of. Reality is composed not of matter, not of solid material entities, but of energy. Energy that does not obey the laws of matter. The laws of matter, what are those? Cause and effect. Time, space, and spatial magnitude. The ultimate reality does not obey those. You can verify this in religious and spiritual meditation, whether it's Christian mysticism, Buddhist meditation, Hindu mysticism, or whatever your preference is. As some of you know from past shows, I do not differentiate between the religions. That offends a lot of people, especially Christians. Christians are really interested in making sure that we understand that their religion is right and everybody else is wrong. Okay, everybody else is going straight to hell and they're right. Well, I think in your own Bible it says, "Do not judge, for you too will be judged." Okay, if that's true, why don't you leave that for God? Okay, God will make that decision, and it's none of your business. All your business is to do is what? Be Christ-like, and that means be filled with love. You're supposed to act like Jesus did in the Gospel of Luke, going to the well and talking to prostitutes, changing water into wine, conversing with and helping criminals, helping them in spiritual help, that is. So we do not differentiate the religions on this show, and another reason why we don't do that is because all the religions tell the same story as we're going to be discussing in upcoming shows, okay? So it's a little difficult for me to think that one religion is over and above another. When, if you just a simple reading of the text of the world religions shows that there's this incredible uniformity, this incredible unison in the song of all these religions. Okay, so in upcoming shows, Well, last week we had Numerology Part 1. Next week is Dr. Bill Deagle, which will be incredible. Tentatively scheduled for the week after next week is a new series called The Nature and Philosophy of Religion. Dragons, Reptoids, Light, Ecstasy, and Meditation. I think that's the subtitle of it. And that'll be part one of many parts. So what this radio show is going to start doing is start having programs in series. If you go to antimatterradio.com, which is the website for this show, you'll see right there linked at the top of the page, it says programs and series, and you click on that and you can see we've had a number of series already, such as when some of the early shows, we debunked the monkey to man thesis, the Darwinian evolution of humans idea. It's a very flimsy theory. That was one series we had, for example. So that's a new theme with the show. We're going to be doing that from this point on. It's almost like this show is going to be a university, what you can call a super university, one where we don't, we're not censored like the, I'm sad to say, the universities of America do to their professors. And how do I know that? Well, I taught in several different universities here in the Midwest of the United States for 8 years. It was wonderful. I loved teaching. I loved the students. But I always was in a battle with the administrators because there are things you can't say in universities, and if you say them and they find out, they will take action, which they did against me. And I'm okay. I'm very happy that they did, because I did not fit in there. I fit in a place where there's no censorship, such as the BBS radio network, where I can say whatever I want. What I want to say is empirical. It is spiritual. And what we want to do is we want to focus on your experience. We want to talk about things that you can verify for yourself. In other words, that you can see for yourself. That's what we mean by empirical. That's what we mean by spiritual. Whatever your consciousness reports is what we're concerned with on this show. For example, if you see a UFO, that's what we can talk about on this show. If you see that it's been extremely cold here in the Midwest all summer, then we can talk about that on this show. Because why are we concerned about that? Because that means we have evidence that global warming is a false theory. It's a politician's theory. It's a theory they want to use to tax us. Okay, now you can't talk about that in the universities, or else you can get in big trouble from administrators, as I did. Okay, but on a show like this, you can. You can just talk about whatever your experience reports, because the only way you can really know things is by what your experience reports. Okay, you can know things about both the world of your senses, which often we call the physical world, and on this show we tend to think that that world is either not real or more likely less real than the spiritual. And also with your experience you can know things about the spiritual domain. Okay, so as I just said, the website for this show is antimatterradio.com. If you go there, you'll see that I've written a book called Telementation. It's $9 on Amazon.com. I hope that you're able to pick up a copy of that and learn the art of telementation, which I've discussed on many past shows. I'm just starting, even though I've written a book about it and I've been doing it for several years, I'm just starting to realize what an utter blessing this power of telementation is that we all have. I've just noticed that, you know, in my life lately, that I'm used to just walking around with no fear. I don't have fear of a lot of the things. I mean, I was on the Restore the Republic, Republic Magazine's webinar earlier this week. If you want to listen to that, go to the archive at antimatterradio.com. And I realized a little ways into it that there was a difference between me and the listeners of that show. And because the listeners were calling up with extremely fear-oriented questions. And I kept saying, no, there's nothing to worry about. All you need to do is develop your spiritual powers and realize that the New World Order, this secret government that controls the world, doesn't have all this power. They're a frilled lizard. A frilled lizard, that was like in Jurassic Park, where that little lizard all of a sudden fans out these flaps near its head and makes itself look real big and it howls real loud. But it's an illusion. It's really a little lizard. It's really nothing. Okay? That's what I was describing the New World Order as, is a frilled lizard. It doesn't have all this power. But the listeners of that webinar on Republic Magazine's broadcast seemed to be filled with so much fear. And I noticed there was a difference between me and them. And the difference between me and them is I'm happy to say I'm lucky to have awareness of spiritual technologies, which I call telementation in the book I've written. And it says in the Bible, Jesus said, with your faith you can move that mountain. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, that's a nice myth. Well, in the book Telementation, I take it literally. Okay, I take it that the power of consciousness is, it makes the power of matter look like nothing. And it's, and why do I say that? Because that's what I've experienced in my meditation practice. I'm a Buddhist. I've been one since 1992, practicing meditation daily. And I found that I knew nothing before my Buddhist practice began. And without my Buddhist practice, I would know nothing now. Literally nothing. I'm not kidding. I'm not just trying to be dramatic to get your attention. I'm really being serious. The world of the senses is not the real one. For all kinds of reasons I talked about, especially on last week's show, the world of the senses is a contradictory illusion. The ancient Greek philosophers knew that. Okay, and it's not just an idea. You can show that with science. You can show it with philosophy. You can show it with everyday examples that we talked about on last week's show. Okay, so it's very important that we understand that there's two levels that you can live on. You can live on what we call on this show the egotistical level, or the ego. And that's a level of fear and desire. That's a level where you think that the physical is the only thing that exists. And the only kind of realms that exist in reality are physical types of realms. Okay, that's what we call the realm of ignorance and confusion. Okay, and then there's a higher plane of consciousness, which is actually dwelling within you now, but probably few of you have even tasted, let alone developed, or better said, unleash or uncover in a significant way. And when you discover that there's this other plane of consciousness, you find out that you know something that hardly anybody else knows, and you just wish you could tell everybody else that it's there and that it exists within them. And you know that you had no idea of the real forces of reality that were out there before that understanding that you got through your... The only way you can get this understanding is through religious practice. Okay, I don't care which religion, you just have to do it. I'm not saying you have to walk around Mecca 8 times or whatever, or that you have to pray for 8 hours in some closet. You have to really figure out how to do it. The goal of religion is to alter your consciousness, not to develop some belief, not to develop some confidence with other people that you're going to be saved or something. The goal is to change your consciousness. Not just alter it from one ego state to another, but to bring it into a state of ecstasy. And this is easy. This is what I describe all throughout my book, Telementation. It's so easy to do. Now, I say in the book, Telementation, yes, it's easy, but you need to first approach it like it's difficult. I think it's important, because you need to realize there's something you got to figure out. You got to get to work and learn how to do it and do it. Okay, but when you do it, you find out that, wow, the spiritual state of consciousness was just right there within me all the time. It was just literally covered by this fear and desire state called the ego. And what was I doing letting the state of ecstasy be covered? See, the state of ecstasy is a spiritual technology. It's a technology which is stronger than any nuclear bomb. It's stronger than any microwave weapon, which the Republic Magazine webinar listeners were so concerned with. And people don't understand. People think I'm just kidding. I'm just talking fancifully or in a whimsical manner. I'm not. This is real. It's quantum physics discovered that consciousness creates reality. Okay, they discovered through their what's called the philosophy of the Copenhagen interpretation, which is a explanation of the data of quantum physics. Quantum physics, of course, is just the study of the little tiny particles of energy that make up everything. They discovered that without consciousness ruling the show, there is no quantum reality to discuss. Do we realize how earth-shattering this is? And this isn't just a couple scientists, you know, in Stanford and then nobody else. This is quantum physics everywhere, worldwide. So go down to your university and talk to a quantum physicist and say, hey, I heard on the Antimatter Radio show that without an observing experiencer, quantum physics doesn't make any sense. And they will, and also say the observing experiencer is the integral factor in reality, according to quantum physics. And they will say, oh yeah, we discovered that back in 1923. The most famous scientists in the world, like Niels Bohr and Heisenberg and so forth, discovered that. And that's what all of us think here in the quantum physics academic institutions of the world. That's just mainstream. And then you'll say, why isn't this in everybody's mind? This is the most powerful information ever. This is what the religious texts have been telling us for thousands of years. That's what Jesus meant when he said, with your faith you can move that mountain. Faith is a state of consciousness. Hey, you think it's an accident that that showed up in the Bible? It's not. That's quoted in the first page of my book, Telementation, that quote of Jesus. Because there's something extraordinary right there. I mean, we go around in our lives thinking there's nothing we can do, that we're helpless, or we're just pushed around by the forces of life and the forces of reality, and there's not much we can do, and oh, I can't have much money, and oh, I can't get a good job, and oh, shucks, I just don't have much power. That's called fatalism. Okay, fatalism is the idea that there's nothing you can do, your reality controls you. So you're fated to just do whatever you're fated to do. Telementation is the exact opposite. Telementation is the idea that you have control over everything. It's inverse fatalism, or negative fatalism, is what telementation is. This is the most important information in the universe. I'm not trying to be dramatic, I'm being serious. And I just realized when I was talking to these wonderful people on the Republic Magazine webinar 2 days ago, that this is the information that they need. I mean, there's people talking about this. Dr. Bruce Lipton is a good example. Dr. Len Horowitz, he has got to be one of my favorites. He's on this network. His show is called Inside Hour. I strongly recommend some of you check him out. He's a classic. The point here is, though, is these listeners that were talking to me, what I wanted to just say to them, I guess, when I finished the webinar was, say, you all need to stop what you're doing and develop your religious powers within you, the ones that are discussed in the Bible, the ones that are discussed in the texts of Buddhism. And then you literally, I mean, you don't try to eliminate your fear, it just goes away. You realize there's nothing that can harm you because your consciousness is controlling reality, just like the quantum physicists discovered. There's nothing, there's no pseudoscience here. There's nothing careless that I'm saying. This is all just incredibly straightforward. In our most prestigious science we've ever developed, called quantum physics, has discovered this. I mean, the Native Americans knew this. Why do you think they did? Sorry, I didn't mean to say Native Americans. I hate that phrase. I meant to say American Indians, okay, or Indians. Okay, I hate all these politically correct terms that I'm even programmed to just fall into them by accident at times. Native American. I mean, we're just Americans, okay? There's no Black American, White American, Native American. There's just people living in America that want to struggle to have the best life possible. That's what we are. Anyways, side issue. Let me get back to the topic here. The American Indians, we're told by anthropologists that they would have things like what's called a rain dance. And white Americans in the anthropology departments they've kind of made fun of that through the decades, the anthropologists who were all just basically white people of European philosophical lineage. In other words, they had white European philosophical ideas that they were influenced by. So they would see something like the rain dance and they would think, oh, that's cute. Look at the little savages with their little rain dance. That's so funny that they think that they're magical and they can control the weather. Well, it's so sad for the anthropologists that now they've been proven to be utterly imbecilic, to use a wonderful word, in their assumption that the rain dance had nothing to it. Because what was the rain dance? It's all the people of the some tribe or whatever getting together to have a festival, a celebration, a ritual to create the rain. And the way they would do that is they would all gather together, their states of consciousness together, would form in such a way that with their faith they would cause the rain. Instead of with their faith they would move mountains, with their faith they would cause the rain. And this is exactly what quantum physics has discovered, is how reality actually works! Exclamation point. So the rain dance is actually backed up by physics. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we think we're so smart with our atomic bombs and tanks and our Iraq war, Iran war, Afghanistan war. Here's Obama starting a war in Pakistan. He doesn't even give it. George Bush at least gave reasons for starting a war. All these lies like weapons of mass destruction. Obama, he just doesn't even do it. He just goes and occupies Pakistan and says nothing about it. The media barely even covers it. Anyway, side issue. It's just hard to avoid those issues. They just make me utterly sick. I just can't really... I was talking to Dr. Deagle a little while ago, and I was telling you, I can't even really stand talking to people often now. It's just, I just want to smash my head against the wall. I mean, how can we be so stupid? Okay? Stupid. In all caps. And we just elected the anti-war president who's increasing troops to Afghanistan, occupies Pakistan, keeps Bush's Secretary of Defense on for the Iraq war. And there's people in West Lafayette, Indiana, which was ranked the 10th most intellectual city in America by I think it was U.S. News and World Report or something, recently ranked as that. People in this town walking around with Obama shirts on. What? Are we totally insane? He's 9 months into office, and it's just George Bush, the third term. Anyways, I don't want to pollute this show with political issues because they're a downgrade from talking about the spiritual. So it's just hard not to. When you develop your spiritual consciousness, you develop compassion, and it makes you become political. At least it has for me, and other people I've noticed that happens to also. It's therefore difficult to see us all living in this state of ignorance, this state of discompassion, to invent a word. So what's the Antimatter Radio Show about today? Today we're supposed to be talking about archaeology, religion, and paranormal phenomenon that is not conducive to the mainstream point of view, the mainstream view of history. In other words, there's a whole set of data. There's all kinds of sets of data, experiments you can do, sites on the planet Earth that you can go visit, which are all there waiting for us to discover as a whole culture, which have been discovered by others before us, which destroy the mainstream view of reality. The mainstream view of reality is kind of like this. The only thing that exists is matter, or stuff that, you know, realms that look just like it. If there's a God, it's far off in some other domain which we can't see or something. The way to religion is just to believe a couple things, you know, like believe that you're going to heaven or saved or something. And it looks like we might have evolved from monkeys a couple, you know, who knows actually when. Nobody's really specified that. And war is normal. It's fine. You know, it happens. That's the way history is. Humans aren't that smart. We've got massive brains, but we're just kind of stupid. And with all our war and TV and everything else, and we can't even figure out that Obama's a liar. We're wearing Obama shirts all over West Lafayette, Indiana. That's all. That's, you know, I mean, I could go on, but I'm giving a generalization what reality in America, kind of like the perception of reality for the average American. Okay, well, all of that is false, a complete joke. We need to wake up now. What are we doing thinking all this? I mean, there's no evidence for any of this stuff. We just go to our schools and they just tell us this, don't give us any evidence, and we all just believe it. That's called brainwashing. That's a straightforward definition of brainwashing. Example of brainwashing. The definition of brainwashing is when you are secretly taught that the false reality is the true reality and the true reality is the false reality. Okay, that's what were being taught on TV in the churches and in the schools. Okay, let me give some examples. Let me give a review. So there's some new listeners, I bet, on this show this week. So let me just give a couple. Let me give a 30-second summary review of what we have discussed in past shows. There is no evidence that human evolution from chimpanzees is a correct theory. Keyword there is theory. Go listen to Antimatter Radio Show programs 1 and 2 on antimatterradio.com for those. There are monuments all over the world, such as Baalbek, which is in Lebanon, which are so sophisticated that we do not know how to build them today, but somehow our ancestors or somebody or something built them long ago. Okay, those are all over the world. Okay, just go listen to past editions of the show. There are skulls in museums. One is called the Coneheads, which has now been made a mockery because of the stupid Dan Aykroyd movie and the Saturday Night Live skit. That's actually taken a very serious discovery in archaeology and making a mockery of it. So now everybody, if you bring it up to people, they just laugh. Oh, isn't that a funny movie? They don't realize that the Conehead skulls are sitting in museums worldwide, which I've discussed on past shows. And as I discussed on past shows, they simply show there was some sort of either extraterrestrial race or another kind of hominid, which was radically different than Homo sapiens sapiens. Or Neanderthal, Homo neanderthalensis, the Neanderthals, in other words. Radically different because they had a massive brain cavity. I mean massive. So, I mean, that's good enough right there. I got a whole other list here. You can go listen to past shows. That's a summary. What does the summary tell us? The real story of reality is being hidden from you if you're following the information given on mainstream channels, such as television, such as church, such as school. Okay, so now there's the summary, so let's move on now. Now. Let me say one thing first of all. Let me go back to this. I called out certain Christians a little while ago on the show for being basically condemning people to hell. Basically doing, it says in the Bible, God will be the judge, and then I see Christians, all they do is judge. I mean, in so many cases. Judge, judge, judge. Oh, Buddhism, Satanism. Oh, telementation is devil work. Oh, anything else but my little, narrow, pathetic, unexplored, unchallenged, uncritical view of Christianity is right, and everybody else is going to hell. Okay? I already explained why there's no room for that in this show. I mean, go read Colossians 3:11, that verse, and tell me that your view stands up to that verse. Okay? Where that verse says, every person is God. Okay? That makes sense? Is that clear enough? If you're black, if you have American Indian colored skin, if you're white like me, if you're whatever, according to the Bible, you are God. Go read Colossians 3:11. Okay, so anyway, a lot of Christians think that anything outside their view is evil. Well, that's not biblical. I already just gave some hints as to why. I could give a whole lot more if I had time and felt like it, which I don't. But what I want to say is this. It's similar to something I said on last week's show. Just because you see a paradigm different than yours does not mean that it's evil. And also for a lot of the truthers out there, the 9/11 truthers, which I'm a member of that group, of course. Some of you are tricked into thinking that a lot of spiritual technologies like meditation and numerology and so forth are evil because the New World Order practices them. That's not necessarily a reasonable argument. Just because they're interested in them doesn't mean that they're evil. Okay, they're also the New World Order also is interested in guns. Okay, I mean, they have bodyguards with guns and so forth, so they're for guns. That doesn't mean guns are evil. As we've talked on last shows, guns are the power for the people. Okay, so you need to be real careful before you start judging everybody as being hell-bent and sinners. You need to make sure that your own religious book really stands up to that. Okay, and I'm not really talking about the Old Testament. I'm talking about more the New Testament. To tell you the truth, I don't really understand the Old Testament, and I really shouldn't even be talking about Christianity too much since I'm a Buddhist. Well, I guess I can talk about it as much as I want, but because I've read the whole Bible, studied it in great detail. So I guess I do have the authority to say something about it. I don't usually talk about the New Testament because I don't really understand the Old Testament. A lot of people want to just throw it out and say, oh, it's just all about rape and murder and war and incest and all. It's just a crazy set of books and I don't really understand it and blah, blah, blah. I've heard a lot of people like to argue for atheism using that, or that a lot of atheists like to attack Christianity doing that. And I've seen a lot of Christians, they really don't have any defense against that. It's pretty, they're not really expecting that kind of attack. But I'm not willing to throw, it seems the Old Testament is some sort of history. And we need to find out, is it the history of Atlantis? Is it the history of Egypt? Is Samaria? Is it the history of, 500 BC to 100 AD? I mean, I view it as something important, but we don't understand what it is yet. I know Michael Tsarian, you can go to terrascopes.com. Check out him. I'm sure most of you know who he is who are listening to this show. I know he thinks that the Old Testament is the history of Atlantis. He says that in some of his DVD presentations. So I tend to agree with that. But anyways, let's move on here. So let's talk about some of the meditation, science, archaeology, and so forth that challenges the mainstream view of history, which we gave a sort of humorous definition of a little while ago. Where do I start? I got a whole list in front of me here. Let's start with Patrick Garrell. That's spelled G-E-R-Y-L. Patrick Garrell is an author who wrote a book on 2012. Okay, I was actually looking for the book in front of me here on my bookshelf, and I couldn't find it before the show. Looked all over the office, couldn't find it, so I don't know where it is. It's just go look him up on Amazon and you'll see his book about 2012. It's not the book Understanding 2012, it's a different one. He's got one called How to Survive 2012, it's a different one. So in that book, it's about the Mayans and how the Mayans predicted 2012, and he says he's got an interesting take on that, and with that take, if you accept it, you can make all kinds of predictions about what's going to happen in 2012 and what we're leading up to and so forth. And it has to do with the magnetic fields and pole shifts and all that, which so many people, such as John Major Jenkins, say is what 2012 has to do with. It's pretty extraordinary that people like John Major Jenkins made that prediction years ago, because the magnetic field of the Earth is radically decreasing right now. It's decreased tremendously. So that's a wake-up call right there, because John Major Jenkins wrote a book quite a while ago, I think a decade ago, maybe it was, I can't remember, maybe a little longer than that, actually, that said that 2012 is true, what the Mayans said is true. It's not the end of the world, it's a global shift in consciousness, when there's a whole lot of people predicting that now, including myself. And what Jenkins said was, it has to do with the magnetic fields of Earth changing, and now here we have scientists discovering there's huge holes in the magnetic field all over the Earth, and it's weakened tremendously and so forth. So that's a shocker. That's a wake-up call. And, of course, all the academics are ignoring that, probably calling him a conspiracy theorist or something. He's got straightforward scientific empirical information here. Shocking predictions. Predictions more powerful than anything they've ever made in general. Because if you notice, academics don't make very good predictions. They'll come out and say, we predict global warming, and then, it's the coldest summer we've ever had here in the Midwest. So that's, if you're all laughing over there, that's supposed to be funny. Okay, so anyways, back to Garrell, he wrote this book, and on the first, I think it's the first page, he wrote the book, and I think it was 2004 or 5 or something. He says that the Mayans, he's got a little different take than Jenkins on the Mayans. He says it has to do with sunspots. And there's some researchers out there that say, well, it has to do actually with both global or pole alterations, magnetic field alterations of Earth, and sunspots. It's a combination of the two. Garrell made this prediction on the first page of his book. He said, well, 2012 has to do with decrease in sunspots, a vanishing of sunspots in the sun. The Mayans predicted it long ago. He figured out a code or something in Mayan language and architecture and writings and so forth to get him to predict that. And he says that's what he's discovered, that's what they're talking about, and that's what 2012 is largely all about. And I, you know, that's pretty interesting. But he wrote, the thing is, he wrote that book in 2004 or 5 or something. Guess what happened last year? Just take a guess. The most unprecedented decrease and vanishing period of sunspots, I think, ever recorded in known recent history, recent meaning the last, you know, 600-700 years, of no sunspots in the sun. Unbelievable. Okay, there's something big. There's something so big to this. Maybe it's a coincidence that Garrel predicts this. I don't know. But somebody needs to go and talk to him. Some universities need to be calling him up to figure out what he discovered, what's going on, what the Mayans are talking about. Because if the Mayans could know that way back then, and they wrote about it, wrote it down, and they also knew several outcomes that would happen, which we call 2012, we need to get on this now. Of course, the academics will ignore it. So we need to do it as citizens. We need to explore this. Okay, so what's the point of talking about this? The point of talking about this is the following. The ancient Mayans were extraordinary. They had some kind of information, some kind of technology, some kind of something that we don't even understand now in our known technology. I had an email, so he asked, what do you mean by known technology? I've often said, you know, known history. What that means is the mainstream view. If you go to a university and they talk about technology, and then the same view of technology is shared on TV and in church, and everybody talks about this certain view of technology, like, here's an example, the space shuttle is high tech. There's an idea of technology. Of course, the space shuttle is a tin can, low-tech pilot junk, decades old. But anyways, blows up half the time. That's what known technology is, what everybody agrees on. And then that's always different from real technology. The same could be said about history. There's known history. Oh, yeah, here's known history is. Oh, here, let's just take the example of World War II Germany, for example. Here's known history. This is what you get taught in school and church, and everybody will tell you this is what history is. Germany collapsed economically in the 1920s, and then this guy named Hitler came, and he somehow, nobody really knows how, powered the country back in about 4 years to being the greatest superpower in the world. And then the guy Hitler turned real mean and started bombing everybody, and that led to World War II. Okay, that's known history. Notice there's it's a joke. There's that point in there I made about how nobody really knows how Hitler, blah, 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 how he got the country to rise to power. I said that on purpose as almost to be humorous, because that's what you'll be taught in school. Okay, so that's known history, what everybody talks about, and here's real history, okay? Germany collapsed in the 1920s economically, and that in the same fashion that economic collapse helped Napoleon set up his police state, his tyrannical order, Hitler was able to do the same. How he could get his country to be so incredibly powerful in just 4 short years is because he had massive funding from IBM, Ford, I think it was Pepsi or Coke or something, one of those, and all sorts of other, Rockefeller, so all sorts of other ultra-powerful U.S. corporations and corporatists. Go read a book by Irvin Black called IBM and the Holocaust. Now, he is no joke of a historian. He is a very prestigious historian. That'll pretty much set the story straight. He just says right in the beginning of that book, yeah, if you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., you walk in the front, and there's one of those population machines that the Nazis used to keep track of everybody so they could kill them in their eugenics practice. He says it says right in the front of that machine, it says IBM. That's it's the brand label of the machine. Okay. Amazing. So anyways, that's what we mean by known history. So back to the subject here. The Mayans, Patrick Garrel, his 2012 book. How could we know all this? I'm sorry, how could the Mayans know? They're clearly orders of magnitude beyond our known technology, our known view of the world here in 2009 America. So there's something, the point I want to make is that there's something to this. The point is that our ancestors were more advanced, as we've discussed on past shows. Okay, so let's get to more examples here and discuss what the, I want this show today to partly be an introduction to the show in 2 weeks, which is on it's program one in the series, The Nature and Philosophy of Religion. Okay, a lot of the concepts today I want to just have down, so we have those down when we go into that show. Okay, let me bring up another one. This is going to be hard for people to understand, so I need to explain it carefully, but quickly. I want to talk about sun worship. Okay, that's, as Jordan Maxwell has pointed out, and Michael Tesarian, and you know, lots of researchers have pointed out, it's interesting that Sunday is called Sunday, S-U-N, and Jesus is called God's Son. And there's all kinds of interesting little things like that about Christianity. And then you go over to the Egyptians, and you find out that they worship the sun. And then you go over to the Hindus, as I already discussed on this show, and find out that their description of ultimate reality is called Brahman. And it's like an infinite sunlight. Okay, and then you find out, and then you read about Saul in the New Testament on the road to Damascus. And he had his vision of God, and it was not of a person. It was light. Sound familiar? Sound like Brahman? Okay, that Brahman is infinite light. Saul's vision is of the light of God, which, I mean, if it's the light of God, it has to also be infinite light, that described that way. The Buddha is often called Buddha, the Buddha of infinite light, and on and on and on and on and on. Okay, now there's something huge to learn here, massive. Okay. It's so big that it just staggers my mind. I was onto this a little bit, and on my website, antimatterradio.com, if you go on the side, it says UCLA Talk, the sidebar of links. I mentioned this briefly at the beginning of that talk. That's a very academic talk, but people have told me they really like it. It's right in line with this show. So anyways, in the beginning of that talk, I say, there's two ways to know ultimate reality. One is through quantum physics, the study of these little tiny pieces of energy that make up everything, and the other is through meditation. I said then Buddhist meditation. I've changed since then, and I thought Buddhism was superior to other religions. Now I'm not going to say if I think it is or not. I just don't really care. Okay, I think all the religions are in unison. So, anyways, that's what I want to get at here with this sun worship idea. And then let me get right to the point. The point is, all the religions are talking about the ultimate reality, the super divine entity that's behind everything, the creator of everything, the cause, or sorry, not the cause, the reason for everything, the real power of things, the real nature of things, is a sort of light or divine light or God light or infinite sunlight or something. Okay? Now, in my meditation practice, I go through powerful periods and weak periods and in between periods. In other words, there'll be a few weeks where meditation is powerful and I'm getting to heights I've never been at before. And then there will be weak periods and so forth. Okay. I've found that in the high periods, I've gotten to a place, often in meditation, what people call nirvana or satori. Those are Buddhist terms of ultimate reality or enlightenment in Buddhism. And when you get there, you know that, oh yeah, this is what they meant when they wrote about nirvana. It just kind of makes sense. You just kind of know it. Just kind of like when you see a bird and you see the redness, you just know it's red. You don't really need to explain to someone. You just know that that's what red is. For a red bird, that is. When you get to this state, this high state in Buddhism, you kind of have this, not kind of, you have this, I said kind of because I'm sort of not sure how to explain this to people, because you have to be where in the experience I'm describing now to understand what I'm talking about. But what happens is, it's as if you see everywhere energy. And the energy kind of looks like light. vibrating light, vibrating in and out of existence. And it takes, you know, you have to really work at meditation. This is a very high state. You don't need to meditate and practice your religious practice, your prayer, your Christian mysticism or whatever to get to this point. I mean, you can have fantastic experiences before this. You don't need to go this far. If you do, great, but just doing, well, anyways, we'll get to that later. I found that infinite sunlight is as, it's as if you see an infinite sunlight everywhere when you get to these highest states of meditation. And I just find it interesting, then, that our ancestors all, in all their religions, basically say the same thing about their religions. The ultimate power is an infinite sunlight that's all around them. It's coming to them in the night. It's seen all around them in meditation, in certain moments of ecstasy or realization. And it makes me understand that our ancients were in tune to these ultimate powers that current-day Americans have virtually no clue that they even exist. Very sad. I think we think, well, anyways. So Walter Crutton, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, he says in his book that meditation is a spiritual technology of a, which becomes very widespread in a more advanced age than ours. Okay, we live in a sort of low-level age right now. If you doubt that, then just go, you know, go watch the news tonight about your Afghan war, your Pakistan war, your Iraq war, your genetically modified food, your, you know, you get your Michael Jackson coverage on the news tonight, and on and on and on. And everybody's glued to their TV sets and just, you know, wide-eyed and titillated by whatever they see. So that's the characteristics of a lower age, or what I'd like to say is a pathetic age. So we think of technology not as a spiritual technology in our culture. We think it's just moving matter around. Okay, that's, I think I agree with Cruttenden that it's not really what more advanced ages think of technology as. We think of technology as kind of like Tinker Toys. The better you can move pieces of matter and hunky clunks of matter around and piece them together, the better you can do that, the better toys you have. So the way to get smart is to have better computers, and the better computers, the faster the internet, and the better the internet, the more you'll know. Certainly with better internet, the more you can know. There is no question. But the point I'm trying to make is that that's still low-level information, because it's not yet, typically, in the domain of the spiritual, the high information. Okay, so technology to the ancients, according to, you know, we're talking about the Mayans and how they knew about 2012. Now we're talking about sun worship, which I'm calling basically not actual people sitting down and bowing down to the sun and praying to the sun. You know, of course that happened, but what I'm talking about it more is a experience of ultimate reality all around you, which in high states of meditation and prayer and religious practice will appear to you like an infinite energy and sunlight everywhere around you. And just having this experience is just incredible joy. For some reason, this incredible ecstasy is associated with this experience. Okay, so that, what I want to say is that's technology. Okay, so that's technology in the higher sense, not the Tinker Toy sense we just described. In the higher sense, technology is discovering ethereal powers that you have, that make you up, that you have within you, that are the cosmos. And then you integrate them with your consciousness and use them for ecstasy, for helping others, for peace, for celebration. Telementation is the best example of this. But I think that's what technology really is in the higher sense. And like I said on the Republic Magazine webinar a couple days ago, and somebody was asking me, he was so, well, he appeared to be very worried about biomagnetic weaponry that the government has developed, which could zap us all right away. I said, well, they've got 30 technologies like that they could zap us all with right away. If you're dead, you're dead. Who cares? Okay? Because it'll be done in a second and it won't matter. Okay? I mean, of course, looking at it from now, it will. But there's nothing you can do about sitting around there worrying about it. Our parents and grandparents' generation, let them develop these technologies, nuclear weapons and so forth. Let them have control of them. And so you can't walk around now in fear thinking, you know, they've got all this power over you. Okay? If they kill you with it, they kill you with it. Unfortunately, that would happen, but there's nothing you can do about the fact that our parents and grandparents' generations let those let these criminals develop those technologies. So forget about it. Okay? And you know what? It's a better reason to forget about it because if you, as I said on that webinar, if you develop your spiritual gifts that all the religions discuss, your faith that can move that mountain, if you develop that, to quote Jesus again, the biomagnetic weapons or nuclear weapons are nothing compared to those. I'm not just trying to be dramatic and you know, give radio listeners or something. I don't make any money off this radio show, so this is just for fun. I got fired from teaching from Purdue University, and as soon, right when I did, I knew. I said, I'm not going to get another teaching job. I'm going to do radio. I knew right away that's what I wanted to do, and I've got other ways to make money. So this is just for spiritual fulfillment, this show, for me and for you. Okay, so when I say that a nuclear weapon is nothing compared to the spiritual power in your mind, I'm not kidding around. If you don't understand, it's just because you don't know what I'm talking about. You don't know what Jesus meant when he said your faith can move that mountain. I bet you'd even ask the most stodgy fundamentalist, is that verse literal? And they are going to want to say yes, but they're not going to have any idea how what it means. Because when I say stodgy fundamentalist Christian, I mean people that take the Bible literally, but I guess I'm being kind of critical, aren't I? What I mean is that a lot of fundamentalists want to stick to the idea that the Bible is literal, but they can't explain it. Okay? Because when you come across that verse, like, your faith can move that mountain. What is that verse? Let me open up the book Telemitation here, sitting right in front of me. Get that verse. I guess it's not on the first page. It's in the book somewhere here. Jesus is quoted on the first page. It's Mark 11:24. Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire, when ye pray to them, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. Wow. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, right there. Okay, I mean, do you think this is a joke? I mean, so back to fundamentalist Christians taking the Bible literally. They don't know how to explain verses like that in their literal point of view. They don't know how to explain the your faith can move that mountain verse. Okay? I got to stop paging through this book. It's in Telemitation. I'll find it and mention to you what the verse is next week. I can't sit here and keep looking at it because I'll pay attention to that now rather than this show. The only way to answer verses like that, what was it, Mark 11:24, is to come up with this idea that you have ultimate spiritual powers within you. Okay? It's all over the Bible. It's all over the Buddhist text. It's all over the Hindu text, Islamic writings. And this is what religion is, and we've been tricked into thinking it's not. Okay, and it's hard for me to explain how exactly a nuclear weapon is nothing when you develop your faith, your telemitational abilities, when you develop your spiritual innerness or innermostness, to use a word I use in the book Telemitation. Let me just try to explain what I mean by that. What I mean is, we all of us humans here are creating the world together with our spiritual consciousnesses. If we have fear, we will create worlds of fear. If we have hope, which is, and I describe as another unenlightened state in the book Telemitation, we will create worlds of hope, but not fulfillment. See, because hope is not fulfillment, it's the longing for fulfillment. Okay, so what we need to do is have worlds of peace and ecstasy that we create. Ecstasy just means religious overfilling of your soul. And it's really the only way you can put it. You have to feel it to know what it is. Okay, so if we are creating this world with our consciousnesses, then we can create a world where nuclear weapons are nothing to us. They'll never be used. They're just going to sit and rust. And if you have a trouble believing that this is true, well, then why does, I assume most people listening to the show are Christians, why does your own Bible talk about it? Why does the... Why does the Buddha's work talk about it? Okay. Why does the American Indian shaman know of this power and utilize it and have his ancestors tell him about it? Because it's real, because quantum physics discovered it, and because it is something that must be grasped by all humans now. Okay? There's nothing to fear. I know that the global elites and the Aleister Crowleys and so forth were interested in also. Well, of course they were. Wouldn't you want to harness the ultimate power and then tell everybody else through the media and churches and stuff that it doesn't exist? Of course that's what they want to do. Okay? So, I mean, how clever is it to take the ultimate power, keep it a secret for yourself, and then tell all your slaves that there is no such thing. You're just, all you are is a monkey, an evolved monkey. That's quite brilliant, isn't it? That's called total control. That's called total slavery. All right, so don't worry, get over it, okay? Get over your fear. Just do it. Just get involved in spiritual practice, because doing it, well, your life will be in two segments. Before you learn telementation or your spiritual practice of your choice, and after. So now some of you might say, well, where do I go to learn this? What do I do? I don't have a lot of answers for you on that. I wrote a book. I'm a Buddhist, so I come at this from the Buddhist perspective. And I wrote a book called Telementation, which is basically a guidebook, the meditation, to learn how to do all this. Okay, so it took me a long time. It took me 20 years to figure this out. Of course, others had figured it out too. It took me a long time to come to them, and you know, to discover them. And I quote some of them in the book Telementation. But so you can use that, and you can make use of my many years of research and just learn it quickly. So, but if you don't want to go the Buddhist route, and you want to go the Christian route, I don't know which way for you to go. I actually do have a couple suggestions. If you want them, email me, and I'll give you the suggestions of how to go this route, the Christian path, a couple books I can recommend. I don't want to give them over the air for a number of reasons. So email me if you want them, and I'll probably respond. By the way, some of you have emailed me, and I've not responded. I apologize for that. I'm kind of overwhelmed with work and emails and research and so forth, so I'll get to that quickly. But let's discuss. So what I was discussing last is sun worship and nirvana and quantum physics all kind of are the same subject. And that means two things. One, it means our ancestors knew this. And also it means, two, that your consciousness has an eye. Okay? It's not an eye like a physical eye, one of your physical eyes in your head that you use you believe you perceive matter through them. All these colors and surfaces of the world that you see. Okay, there's another eye that you have, and it sees the ultimate light of reality, or what you could call quantum reality. I don't know what the nature of this eye is, but if you practice meditation, and as I describe in the book, Telementation enough, or if you go practice your Christian mysticism or whatever long enough, you will discover the same thing. And you'll all of a sudden see overlapping this crude material domain, a more real domain of reality, which is actually reality itself, which was always there. It's just you didn't see it. But you'll literally see it everywhere. And it's utter joy. Okay, and you'll wonder, how am I seeing it? And the only explanation is there's an eye, a third eye, it's often called. Eye of consciousness, a third eye of consciousness, which has the ability to see this ultimate reality, which the quantum physicists have discovered. Okay, so this is what the ancients developed a lot of their technologies around. So we wonder how they build the pyramids, how they build Baalbek, how they know all this information about astronomy that they did. Well, it's they were living on a spiritual plane, which is orders of magnitude higher in technology than us. Okay, so I mean, there's lots of ways to think about this. I'm looking at some examples here on a piece of paper in front of me that I'd love to give, but I don't think I'm going to get into them because it would take me too long. Let me just say this. There are lots of different powers you can carry out in your consciousness, and I'm going to discuss them all in future shows. Okay, and that's what I'm hinting at right now. But this show is supposed to be about archaeology and religion that is not kind to the mainstream view. So let me discuss a little bit more of that. One thing I'm going to be talking about in 2 weeks on our first show about the nature and philosophy of religion is that all the religions involve extraterrestrials and UFOs, okay? Creatures coming that are not from Earth, coming to Earth and creating us. Often they're in spaceships, depending on what religion you're talking about. Like in Ezekiel, there's a bunch of spaceships discussed in the book of Ezekiel, in the Hindu text, the Vedas. They're just loaded with all kinds of spaceships and extraterrestrials and so forth. And a lot of people are inclined to say, oh, that's cute. They all have such nice imaginations. But for lots of reasons we're going to discuss on that show in 2 weeks, and I'm going to get into a little bit here, this might not be any joke. Now, in standard fashion on this show, we don't try to prove points, or maybe prove is too strong of a word. We don't try to show our points with theories. We try to show our points with the simplest evidence, which you can all go and verify with your own experience. Okay, so if we want to say that history that you're being taught in school is not correct, and our ancestors are more advanced, we discussed that monument Baalbek in Lebanon, a real monument that all of you can get on a plane and go see or read about in an archaeology book, and that pretty much sums it up. Okay, so I want to introduce you to this idea of extraterrestrials and religions. It's called ufology. 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 Okay, or UFO religions. Now, this is very difficult for us to talk about this because all of you have been conditioned in the movies and so forth to think that, oh, this is all silly. Only little imbeciles talk about little green men. Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what the world religions are discussing. Okay? If it's so silly, why does it say in all these world religions that there are all these extraterrestrials and crafts? I'm interested in why they all discuss these, and I'm going to give all kinds of examples in the next coming weeks. Why do all the religions discuss that? So let me just, the point here I want to bring up is a certain example of ufology, which will put us in the empirical perspective. Okay? I want to talk about the Dogon, D-O-G-O-N. I won't spend a lot of time on it because I think probably some of the listeners are already familiar with this and therefore don't need a huge dissertation on what it's all about, so I can sum this up pretty quick. The Dogon are an example where we can literally prove that ufology is real. We can prove it just as much as we can prove about inverting our history we've been taught in schools, like I just said when we discussed Baalbek, how Baalbek allows us to very carefully and empirically, scientifically, and objectively argue for an altered view of history, utterly altered, inverted, that we've been taught, because we've got the simple evidence for it, a monument we can go look at, which can't exist if the history we're being taught in school and church and on TV is true. Okay, so what I want to do now is with this idea of ufology, UFO religions. I want to say all the religions are based in ufology. Okay, so some of you might say, no, there's God. Well, yeah, that may fit into this scenario. It could be that, there's one of the extraterrestrials that's so advanced that it controls everything, okay, and it's not bound to this universe or something. So, and it's a creator of it all or something. So, I mean, don't shut down just because I'm not focusing on that. That could fit right into this, okay, because the Bible certainly is filled with all kinds of ufology. Okay, I want to talk about the Dogon. It's an African tribe. Let me just sum it up. Here's what happened. They were discovered, I don't know what it was, the 1920s or something. The Europeans discovered them. So European culture was introduced to them. Okay? And they told the anthropologists and archaeologists that discovered them that we come from the planet Sirius. Or sorry, not the planet Sirius, the Sirius star system. If you look up in the night, that's one of the, I think it's usually called the brightest star. It's a real bright star. And the Dogon, this tribe, would say, told the anthropologists and archaeologists, yeah, there's not one star in the Sirius star system, there's two. Actually, I can't remember, they may have said there's even three, but the point, the real meat of the story is the two stars that they were talking about. And they said one is big and bright, and the other one is small and dense and not bright, and it's real or heavy, and it's a certain color, and the other one's a certain color, and they have certain kinds of orbits and stuff. And thank you very much. And the anthropologist and archaeologist said, that's so cute that these little children, these little savages, came up with this nice little story. What wild imaginations they have. Well, guess what happened when... I'm not kidding about what I'm saying. You can go verify this for yourself. Guess what happened when we, smart, scientific Americans, built big enough telescopes to look at the Sirius star system? Just take a guess what we discovered. We discovered exactly what they said. Okay? So... you can go look at the books of the anthropologists that discussed them before the discovery in modern astronomy of Sirius, and then you can go look up in libraries how the astronomers discovered Sirius and how they discovered that the pre-told Dogon scenario of Sirius was discovered later by the astronomers. Okay, what does this mean? It is literally impossible that the Dogon knew that information. Except under one of two scenarios. One, somebody told them that years and years before they were initially discovered by European scholars, European academics. Okay, and then two, is that the story's true. Okay, but there's a problem here. Do you see that number one is number two? Because whoever these other scenario number one is the idea that, oh, somebody else told it to them before 1920 or whatever the time was that they were discovered. If that's true, then, well, who are these people that told them? It would be people that have this super knowledge, this knowledge that even our so-called enlightened modern science didn't have, well, modern back at that time. So how would they get the information? Well, the bottom line is the only way this information could be available is if either somebody came from this planet Sirius, somebody was super, with a very strong power to really get people to believe this story. So some group of people or creatures or something came from this star system, told the Dogon about it, and they were so influenced and impacted by these people or creatures telling them about Sirius that they believed it. Okay, because if somebody just comes up and tells you, oh yeah, Sirius has this, this, and this, you're not likely to believe it if it's just your next door neighbor telling you. So it'd have to be if someone of, or something of, that really shocks you. So you really have such a strong reason to believe them that you believe it through centuries, you know, however long the Dogon had this religion in place. Okay? So basically, there's no other way to that this could be the case, and that somebody either came from Sirius or something like that. Okay, so there's something, here's the point, there's something huge going on here. So if any of you are still not so sure that we're having a very sophisticated, rigorous discussion here about ufology, well, now you know we are. This isn't some sexy, fashionable, trendy subject I just want to bring up on the show because it's fun and feels, you know, rebellious. No, this is real academic study. No messing around, okay? So you couple this idea with the Dogon with the fact that all the other world religions are absolutely imbued with ufology. Leads us to something massive. Massive, massive. And as usual on this show, we give you the most massive information. Okay, now, you ready for that? Now, let's go even deeper here. I got something even better for you. I don't think I discussed this on a past show. I've discussed it on other shows. Sometime, somewhere in the recent past, I've discussed this on some radio show. I don't think it was this one, so I'm going to bring it up again. I am holding in my hand, this is right on the topic we just got done discussing. I'm holding in my hand a book called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital by David Ovison, who is a Freemason. And as many know, I don't have a negative opinion on Freemasons. I do of the Illuminati, which infiltrated the Freemasons, but not the Freemasons themselves. Okay? I wrote about, go to RestoreTheRepublic.com and look me up, and you'll see my article I wrote there about that topic. Okay? This book is published by Perennial. And I'd first of all like to cite Michael Tsarian. He is the one who has informed me on his video cast of the existence of what I'm about to read to you in this book. Okay, I would not know of this if it was not for Tsarian. This is on the bottom of page 4 and 5, right at the start of the book. Okay, and I'm just going to tell you what it says. Let me first tell you what's going on, and then I'll tell you what it says in the book. Whoever designed Washington, D.C., and it was not the Founding Fathers necessarily, because as some of you know, the Washington, D.C. was created and shaped, and the architecture for it went up through, you know, over the course of, you know, 100-plus years. You know, there was no White House back when George Washington, first president, was sworn in. Okay, that was built later. And a lot of stuff really got built after 1913 when the Federal Reserve started robbing all Americans of all their money. So there was a lot more money to build things after that. So here's what we find. The nation's capital is devoted to the star system of Sirius, architecturally. That's right. Okay? So this, let me tell you how. There's a hieroglyph. If you look in Egyptian hieroglyphics, they were, the Egyptians, of course, were utterly obsessed with Sirius in the same way the Dogon were. They called Sirius the Dog Star. So interestingly, in the Harry Potter films, Sirius, that character, Sirius is a dog, and you know, he turns invisible, and he kind of ruled everything. And so, I mean, it's very curious. So anyways, there's a hieroglyph of the planet Sirius, and it's basically an oval on top of a... something that looks like an obelisk, you know, like the Washington Monument is an obelisk. There's also one in the center of the Vatican, which I think that one in the center of the Vatican came from Rome. It's actually from ancient Rome. For some reason, I think it's the Vatican. There's Sistine's Chapel. I can't remember which. You just look it up. You'll find out. Back to the hieroglyphs. It's an oval because, you know, the hieroglyphs were little pictures. It's an oval over an obelisk, and then to the side of it is a pentagon with a star in the side of it. And then you look at it, and you say, wait a minute, that's exactly the layout of Washington, D.C. The Oval Office above is north of the Washington Monument, and then to the side of it is a pentagon. And we all know all the incredible things going on with the Pentagon that was built on a September 11, exactly 60 years before 9/11, and they're all on and on. I could go on and on and on for eons about the Pentagon and the Washington Monument. I think isn't it 666 feet in the Washington Monument? It's something like that. I can't remember exactly. So the point here is that Washington, D.C. is laid out to be a ultra-huge petroglyph word, or sorry, hieroglyph word for the Sirius star system. So here's my question to you. Why are the Dogon, the Egyptians, and whoever these people are that created our nation's capital after the Founding Fathers, I mean, because the Founding Fathers were gone by the time all this architecture was laid out, why are all these people so concerned with the Sirius star system? And it goes on. There's other, we're going to find out there's a whole lot of other people and groups and religions that are concerned with the Sirius star system. So, I mean, there are huge things going on here. And if you're sitting around watching your Michael Jackson coverage on TV, do you see how tragic that is? How utterly ignorant that is? Yeah, it is. I think I'm going to call it any way you want, and you're going to jump right in, okay? We discuss things in simple terms here on this show. So please go to my website, antimatterradio.com, which is the website for this radio show. Find lots and lots of great information, all the past shows you can listen to, and tell everybody you can about this show if you think they'd be interested, because I'm putting everything I have into this show. I used to put everything I had into teaching, and now this little 1 hour and a half a week radio show has replaced all that. So I put everything I can into it. And also, if you can, pick up my book, Telementation. Any purchases are appreciated. It puts money in my pocket to allow me to do more of what I'm doing. But more so, you need Telementation for your own sake. So next week, do not miss Dr. Bill Deagle on this radio show. That one will be quite amazing. I want to thank everybody for listening today. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Don't miss the book Corporatism, which has been featured on the Alex Jones Show and which covers everything about the real force of social control called the New World Order. This group exists. It controls all the governments of the world, and it hides within international organizations like the IMF, the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, and others, all of which are not loyal to any one country, but are devoted to controlling and merging all of them through war and economics. Find out how they control the world through false flag terrorism, inflation economics, the business cycle, and through food contamination, war, vaccinations, television, and public education. You can find this book at Amazon.com or at AntimatterRadio.com.